You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so as it's a Tuesday, it's the 5 o'clock shadow double-header Dream Team edition with Nick Kunzer from Sandon Private Wealth and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Nick, you, as always, you've got to paint the picture, the general picture, before we go into the semantics of the day. How does it look, apart from Bitcoin? We'll come to that later.
Look, very, very unexciting. So all the fun and games we had sort of almost a week ago, it'll be a week tomorrow since the Fed sort of changed pivot with their dot plots and inflation chat. Ever since then, we've had a sort of a smorgasbord of Fed officials being wheeled out 10 a day to try to talk back what Mr. Powell obviously scared things a little bit. And you obviously got a rap on the knuckles from someone upstairs just to sort it out. So the last few days have been really uneventful. I mean, the grinding along sideways, we're battling to even move on the JSE. I mean, not even moving sort of 15, 20 points at a go. It's really that quiet. And the same offshore. Look, I will say this though. It seems to be a bit more sort of bullish, sort of a risk on slant to the last few days. We've made back on the offshore markets all of what we lost sort of post-Fed and higher. I mean, the S&P's now just shy, less than 1% away from its all-time high. So in summary, Lindsay, a bit of an uneventful day, but with a positive slant to it, I think sums it up.
Very good. David, go to you now with the Stock Exchange News Service. We had Omnia's results out. We also had a company called Capital Appreciation Limited coming out with their numbers. Anything else that you saw, or do you want to comment on either of those companies?
You know what? I'm still going through Omnia's results, and I'll tell you why. This was a company which a few years ago was very popular simply because it addressed three areas of the South African economy that were very important: agriculture, yes, mining, chemicals. And management was highly rated, and they messed things up, to put it lightly, in about 2018. One thought that the results that we saw were as a result of seasonal factors. It wasn't. They had overborrowed. They had lost a lot of money. And with the result is that they had to come to the market and borrow, literally borrow, as much as they were capitalized. I think it was millions of rands. And it's strange today, they actually paid a special dividend of 400. And they worked tirelessly to turn this company around. There's still a bit of skepticism out there. And conditions haven't really helped them. But why I want to look at it is it for those very reasons. And one needs to go through these results in greater detail. I must admit, I never had the time to do what I wanted to do and go through it in results. But why, in detail, but why mining, agriculture, and chemicals, very important areas. I still think they're battling on some fronts, but it wasn't a bad result. The share price is up slightly, but it has responded over the last couple of days. So Nick might have better, might have a better insight, but it's something. It is a company I want to look further into and see. Listen, is this real? Are management real? Are they going to get it right and bring it back to where it was?
So I can comment because we got sort of feedback from our clever guys in Cape Town. And the overall impression was like quite a solid set of numbers. And as David pointed out, they're on a little bit of a sweet spot. All the areas they operate, we've had bumper crocs on the agri division in South Africa, so they're benefiting from that. Very strong, as we know, we're in the middle of, the jury's out whether we're in a commodity super cycle or not. But their sort of exposure and their explosive business linked to that is really doing well. Their fertilizer side has done well. It's just the chemicals is lagging a little bit, but David points out a rights issue, which is correct. That was paid after a bit of a mess up, to put it lightly, by management a few years ago. But on the back of that, they've actually got quite a strong balance sheet, and a few sort of stars have aligned for them in the last year or two with the commodity prices, as I said, with agricultural prices, and with a strong balance sheet and this bounce back. So they're actually not a bad little position, and I think they're getting their house in order. My only comment I would say is they're not cheap. They're looking probably fairly priced where they are now. But overall, I do like the story. I think it's quite a – in the environment they're operating in, they should be really, pardon the pun, sort of making hay when the sun shines. And I think they're doing okay. I think they're doing all right.
Okay. Let's have a look at Grindrod. A pre-close trading statement. Nick, you'll have to tell me – sorry, David, I'll stay with Nick on this one. Which Grindrod is this one that came out now? It's not the NASDAQ Grindrod. It's the local Grindrod, is it?
Well, give me the share code. Does it say GND or GSH? Yeah, no, so GND. Yeah, so GND is exactly right, Lindsay. It's not the NASDAQ one. It's the Grinrod, what's left here, which is outside of the shipping. So it's basically logistics, transport, and a large part of it is Grinrod Bank, is the financial services. Mm. So it's still got freight logistics, but the shipping bit's been split off. But it's mainly, big part of the earnings is financial services.
David, I read an article today about shipping companies worldwide doing so well now because freight rates have gone from $3,000 to $10,000 to $15,000 per, I don't know if it is per day or per container. I'm just not sure. But anyway, the point is that shipping companies are doing extremely well because of the tightness of so much demand and so little supply post-pandemic, and shipping companies suddenly coming to the fore, and logistics in general. So it all feeds down. You've got the ship, you take the container there, and then the truck takes it away and all that sort of thing. So it feeds down to all sorts of other logistics companies. So shipping doing very well. Would you look at Grindrod, David?
I don't know Grinrod. You mean the shipping side?
Yes, the shipping side.
Would I look at that? I don't know enough about it. I
can really comment on that if you want.
These are all Nick's clients, remember. You know, he handles the family.
Brother, sister, No, actually, no, I used to, funny enough. I'm still involved a little bit. We used to work under my previous life at Grinrod Asset Management. And I actually had a call from a gentleman who will remain nameless.
Why?
Who heads up, you can do the maths. He heads up the shipping division in Singapore yesterday to come out with a sort of moaning how the market does not understand their business, etc. But then I took the Grinrod shipping share price and overlapped it with the Baltic Dry Index, which is the cost of dry freights, which Lindsay, you know very well this.
Yes, I do.
And it's literally tick for tick. I mean, it's up. The share price is up 150% since January. So I don't know if you are listening to the show from Singapore, I don't know why you're moaning, because your share price is up 150%, exactly in line with the shipping price. But I had a really long conversation with him, and he said they really are in a bit of a sweet spot. And he said the way they make a lot of their money, and not just him, the shipping businesses in general, is they have to book where they rent their ships out. So it's not just them leasing out it's not just them sort of leasing out the containers, it's actually their ships they're leasing out. Mm. And it's gone, he was telling me they've gone from, they do sort of what I think they call mid bulk. So it's not the big ones, it's sort of the in-between sort of container ships. They're sort of in that little in-between space. And he said their rates have gone from $5,000-$6,000 to lease a ship. They're now leasing at $30,000.
Is this capsize?
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, capsize,
yeah. Yeah, capsize shipping. So they've gone from $5,000 a ship a day, what they call a wet rate, which includes the fuel, to 30,000, up sixfold. Eh? So these shipping companies, not just Grinrod shipping, I'm talking shipping around the world, they're in a bit of a sweet spot. And he also told me, interestingly enough, in that there was a bit of pressure about with where sort of stuff was coming from. So there's a bit of a fight between Australia and the Chinese, right? So they don't want to ship stuff from Australia to China. They're having a little argy-bargy. But he says it's more money for them, because he says, like, Australia will then ship the iron ore to Brazil, for argument's sake, and then ship it from Brazil to China. So they get like double the cost benefit for these shipping companies. So they're loving these trade wars. So I mean, that's just a part of our conversation. But I do think they're worth a look, but I mean, very much, I think, in the price at the moment. Mm. And of course, David, it's been a bit of a perfect storm too. I mean, who would have thought they would have, thrown a sort of a container in the middle of the Suez Canal, shipping blocking. And then something else, I had a bit of a learning curve yesterday with this chap. He's obviously a 30-year veteran of shipping. He was saying to me, the other problem, of course, because of the container disruption, that there's not enough containers at the ports, right? So a ship won't leave. I said, won't leave if there's not enough containers on the ship. And he said, it's not just because of the cost, it's because of the logistics of sailing that ship. So they can't send the ship to pick up containers in Panama, for example, because they need containers back in Beijing. So they won't send a ship to pick up those empty containers in Panama and send it back, because the captain won't sail that ship because empty containers on a ship is very unstable. So there's a whole lot of stuff going into it. I thought it was a fascinating conversation. So, I had, but yeah, interesting. Yeah.
I just a similar conversation with the CEO of PPC, and asked the question about the imports. And he said, what was interesting about imports, why they come in so cheaply, because it's the marginal, it's dumping. Fundamentally, once you've recovered your fixed costs and that, you know, you can sell the excess at the variable cost, meaning that you can dump cement. He said, but one of the issues, which was very much like that, he said, what was happening is that, yes, we would send our ships across to India, say, or some of the other Asian countries, you know, full of coal, whatever it is, and you've got to bring them back. And what was happening is you'd bring them back full of cement, you know, at the variable cost, not at the full cost. And that allowed a lot of companies here, a lot of the import companies, you know, to sell cheap cement. This is what's happening now. It's exactly what you've been saying. Shipping rates have gone through the roof. So they can't send them back cheaply. Yeah, you can't send them back cheaply, which has prevented some of the imports of that cheap, you know, of the cheap cement.
Yeah, and exactly like also the fact that it was fascinating that this supply disruption, you know, we've seen it everywhere from like Volkswagen moaning they can't get sort of, you know, chips for their cars. Yeah. There's a shortage of chips that have been shipped around. That's why second-hand car sales blew up in the States last month. You know, on the back, it's not necessarily just the shortage of stuff. It's the supply disruption, and these guys won't sail these empty ships with empty containers because it's too unsafe. So they're stuck. So anyway, very interesting. Interesting times, gents. Interesting times.
Yes, indeed. I'm just trying to find what the absolute high was for taking a container. And let's say, Nick, that you decided to sell something and stick a container between South Africa and Europe, for example. I've got a feeling that it was six figures at one stage.
It was up in, I don't know about six figures, but I think it was the Baltic Dry went to, I think, 11 or 12,000 on that, using that as a barometer. I don't know what the actual, like, the freight cost, but using that as a standard. I mean, obviously it's sitting at 3,000 now, but I think at its peak it was definitely over 10, was definitely in the teens. And it's now, so it's still 70% down, I guess, where it, I guess its all-time high was.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my graph now, but it just doesn't make sense to me. All tankers, bulk carriers, general cargo ships, container ships, other shipping. I'm having a look at this, but it was 2009 where it peaked. But anyway, the fact is that, David, you don't know enough about Grindrod, so none of your clients hold it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because of the volatility of the shipping rate.
Yeah.
Exactly like that. It's a very specialized type service. And yeah, obviously, you know, when things are in your favor, you're making money. But as we've seen with Grindrod, you know, things can get very rough. Look, Grindrod is always, remember, these are dollar assets. And, you know, they price and report in dollars.
Yes.
So it does have some appeal.
And you think mining is cyclical? I mean, shipping takes it to another level.
I was going to say that, Nick. This is the ultimate cyclical business, isn't it? Really?
Absolutely. And according to my nameless friend in Singapore, it goes in 7-year cycles. And he said the running joke has been in the shipping industry, like, you know, this is the second 7-year, like, when are we going to get a break? I mean, they've had a really rough time of it. But this is the first time, like, since the pandemic now and the start of this year that they're actually in a bit of a sweet spot. But I think they've had a tough decade, really tough time.
Just on a final note, I was speaking to one of the Grindrod family about this very issue, and he said, well, it doesn't matter what the Baltic Freight Index is doing because we've already leased these things out for a number of years at a specific price.
Yeah.
So it doesn't always mean that they're doing well because the price has gone up.
Yeah, well, isn't that the shipping version of hedging, isn't it?
I mean,
But you're right. These leasing rates have tied up to 5 years up. Anyway, the leasing rates are 30,000 now as opposed to 5.
Okay, let's have a look at the spot prices today to give us some backdrop to the rest of our conversation. The dollar rand is 14.35. The British pound against the rand, 19.99. The euro rand is 17.09. The euro dollar is 119.05. British pound against the dollar is 139.30. The gold price is not doing much. $17.81, $8 an ounce. The platinum price is down 6 to $10.64 an ounce. Where's palladium, please, Nick?
Yeah, also not doing much. Down $20, 2565.
Okay, the oil price is $73.33, and that's the West Texas brand, which is down just about 0.5%. And Brent crude is down very slightly to $74.81, was above $75 earlier on. Bitcoin's been an interesting one today. I know none of us really like it that much, but about an hour and a half ago, it was below 30,000. Now it's rallied manfully, but still down 6.1% to 30,908. Technically, I thought below 30,000, it might fall in a heap because there's a so-called death cross. Nick, you would know more about this than myself and David. A death cross for a formation. But anyway, 30,923. The US 10-year bond yield is 1.475%, and the South African bond is 9.06. The CRB commodity index is only updated once a day on my screen anyway. So let's call it 221. So the market is still intact. The bull market in commodities is very much still intact. David, any other shares that we haven't spoken about that caught your eye today?
Yes. The funny enough, we're talking about the commodity cycle or the commodity. And what hasn't gone down and popped up today was iron ore price. Yes. Was up again. And that's why you've got both African Rainbow Minerals and Kumba at the top end of the JSE today, as well as Sasol. Oil price 75 and looking better. So it's rather peculiar that we're getting a very, very strong market in oil, with the markets turning bullish. A lot had to do with Iran, who's not going to be included, or who are not going to have an easy time, particularly with the new election. So Sasol, which had been actually marked down quite considerably, has come back a bit. But I'm still interested in the iron ore companies and that. I watch that price very, very carefully. At a time when platinum shares were knocked, when gold shares were knocked, even when copper came down, there was hardly a blip in the iron ore price. And I'm not No, I don't think there are experts in iron ore other than perhaps some of the Chinese traders in Singapore or China, but it's just not doing what everybody thinks it should do.
Well, look, I will add this, that at not so long ago, iron ore was up 50% for the year. If you look at the spot price, it's up 30. So it's given back 20%, even though it doesn't feel like it. It's still up 30%.
Yeah.
But the Chinese authorities coming out this morning and saying, or yesterday morning, and saying they're going to look into sort of effectively iron ore speculation and the spot prices. But it also fascinates me too, because everyone's estimates are the miners that I follow and analysts, long-term iron ore price like $65, $70, they're crunching into their numbers. But, I'm a sort of silly old trader, and I just look at the price and I see it's at between 180 and 200. It's been stuck here for 3 months, and I'm thinking, well, if you put into your models that the iron ore price is still going to be here for Kumba Iron Ore and Billiton or in the next 3 months, like, surely these guys must be printing money, printing cash, because everyone's got these things at like $70. It can't be sustainable. It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. Everyone I've listened to as well, and I've heard the rhetoric, it isn't. It's not sustainable because there is an abundance of iron ore. It's not a shortage of a product, but I cannot fathom why it's here. But I mean, I guess, are these guys going to give us a little bit of a special divvy or something? They must be making a lot of money.
It must be. And that's why when I look at BHP and Anglos and Rios and all companies who produce, maybe Glencore is not involved. It's more copper. It hasn't got iron.
Fortescue and a few of the Aussie guys too.
They must be making huge. No. They take it out the ground at a couple of dollars. I don't know. I promise
you. David, if you look at Kumba, number crunching. If you actually look at what they get it out of the Shenzhen mine. The Shenzhen mine in the Eastern Cape. They stick it on a train, and they've got a dedicated train line that goes to Richards Bay. They load it in Richards Bay.
Saldanha
Bay, and they ship it off to China. They're all in cost. If they put it, their worst case scenario is round about between $32 to $36 a ton. It's 200 on the spot price, and it's been 200 for the better part of a couple of months.
I know.
So it really is. I don't know. I can't wait to see the next quarter earnings out of some of these guys, because their free cash flow must be extraordinary.
Iron ore is currently trading at $210.50 per ton. That's down $7 on the day. That's a 3.2% fall on the day. Weekly, it's down 4.75%. Monthly, it's up 10.21%. And year to date, it's up 32.81%. Yeah, but as you said, Nick, it was a little bit higher than that, but still, it's an unbelievable margin that we've got going on here, and long may it continue. It's huge,
definitely.
I don't know.
And the other thing is,
I'm going to have to plot a bulletin against the iron ore price. Just give me a currency. I don't know.
Oh, bulletin. also, David, if you take bulletin, I mean, 20% of the income comes from energy and petroleum, and
copper,
and oils, oil. Now,
yeah, but that's 75.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, if you hold Billiton's shares, please don't sell them. Please do not sell your shares.
Yeah. The other thing, just before we leave the iron ore story, is that the quality of iron ore coming out of South Africa is so highly coveted that the Chinese just love the stuff. I mean, I don't know what the different grades are of iron ore, because, you know,
Lindsay, they don't even ask for the grade. If you're sitting in a smelter in somewhere in outskirts of China, they ask for they ask if it's Kumba iron ore if it's coming from South Africa. No, I'm not genuine story.
Really?
They don't ask for the grade. They ask and say, we're looking for Kumba iron ore, because the iron ore grade is such a high quality, they insist on it. So, I mean, there's one for the books.
Okay. Any top five major movers on the JSE today? Sirius, I won't worry too much about that. African Rainbow Minerals, as David said earlier on, up nearly 4%. Kumba Iron Ore up 3.75% to R597.22. And I have to tell this story again. Wasn't it down in the low 20s, Nick, a couple of years ago? Three, 4 years ago? When was it?
Yeah, it was. No, about 2 years ago. At one point, the running joke was their special dividend they paid back in the day was 28 Rand.
Yeah.
And their share price was, as you rightly said, low 20s. I mean, they paid out a higher dividends at one point. So, I mean, that was the screaming buy of the millennium, if there ever was one.
What a story. It's Altaul up 3.5%. Sasol up 3.25% to 214.75. And don't forget that one was 22 Rand per share. So it's gone up nearly 10 times. In fact, more than 10 times a couple of weeks ago. It's just come off a little bit. On the downside today on the JSE, Bytes down 3.7%. Netcare down 3.75%. Harmony down 3%. Naspers down 2.75%. And Anglo Gold Ashanti down 2.5%. Why is Naspers down? Nick, is that an ex-dividend story, or is that too early?
There was earnings out yesterday
Monday,
morning.
Yeah.
And then they had a trading update 3 weeks ago. I didn't deviate too much, but I just think the more people are trying to dissect what Mr. Van Dyk and them are trying to do and close the gap and realize value. We've spoken endlessly about the rump and all that on this show. The more I get the feeling it's becoming more complicated than shareholders want. And a lot of people are going to vote against this idea. And I'm picking up a real pushback from shareholders that they're worried that the administration is not. And I saw two downgrades this morning, one from HSBC, and one from another house too that have downgraded Naspers and Prosus.
David and I were talking about this yesterday, actually, on Shapiro World, and didn't we say? I mean, I said to you, David, because I read the results from both Prosus and Naspers, and I thought the cross-holding and the interaction between the two companies and Tencent, I found it very complicated.
It's too complicated.
It is too complicated.
Gentlemen, I need to jump off this call because I've sort of prostituted myself out to another media company.
Not another one.
Please don't say it's e-news.
No, who is it?
Let me shoot, guys. But listen, gentlemen, we'll chat again on Thursday. Thanks
can't
all.
I believe you two.
Oh, no, sorry.
Bye-bye. Yeah. All I can say is, as Nick disappears into the mist, the media mist, David, that I really just sort of promote you two and you get poached by other people. You're not very loyal, both of you.
No, neither of us.
Uh-uh. No.
But you know what I wanted to say on that story, which, as I said yesterday, we're trying to overcomplicate issues.
Yes.
And on the whole Naspers story, and what's happened is that I think because Tencent is still very relevant in the life of Naspers and Prosus, and it doesn't matter what they do to the other companies, it's still going to be, the profits are still going to be dictated by Tencent. And from a South African point of view, just hold it. Don't worry about it. Don't get involved. Don't get too complicated. If they do get the other businesses right, there's going to be a little bit of a dividend, but you're still going to be dictated by what happens to Tencent. And the worry is that the more complicated, the more we try and do things, I think the more you're going to turn other investors away offshore, who will go direct for Tencent rather than looking at the complications of Naspers and process. So from a local point of view, just hold them. You know what I mean? Just hold them. Use it as a proxy for Tencent and leave it and don't worry about anything else.
Two great companies anyway. Yeah. I don't know whether they should be split. I don't know what they should be doing, but all I know is
leave them. Yeah. Just leave it as it is now. Don't get, you know what I mean? Let them. I'm not going to involve my clients in paying capital gains tax now as they switch their process. I mean, their Naspers into process. Yes. You know, I'm saying just leave it. You know, just I'm not doing anything. And I'll continue to run it and by watching Tencent. Yeah. There's something now that's quite interesting. While we've been talking,
yes.
I took out BHP versus the iron ore price. And I put it to dollars on a three-year basis. You can give me any year, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. I just looked at it at 3 years because, and yet, if you put $100 into iron ore, it's worth $327. If you put $100 into BHP, it's worth $129. So there's been a huge diversion between the iron ore price and BHP billiton share price.
What about Kumba? You know, can you do the same thing, or is it too late?
I can do Kumba. No. I can do Kumba as well. I just have to. No, with pleasure. You know, I can just. It's very easy to do it. I'm just doing it.
I can just talk about other things now.
While you're
doing that, David, because I know you're not very good at these things. You're not very quick at these things. No, you are very good, David. I'm a Luddite.
Here it is.
There we go. Go on then.
So your iron ore price I mentioned, $327. Your Kumba price, $185. That's on $100. $100 because we have to put it into dollars over 3 years. So if you want to do it over 5 years, we can do the same thing. It's the flash of a pen. There you are. Listen to this. Over 5 years, though.
Yes.
Kumba far exceeds the iron ore price.
In dollars or rand?
In dollars. So $100 5 years ago in Kumba gives you $717. $100 in the iron ore price is $418. So it might be that's the reason that it's already.
So you made seven times your money in Kumba.
Seven times your money in Kumba over 5 years. Yeah. In dollars, huh? Not rand. I can make it rand, but that's complicated for me while we talk. But I mean, I think that's where maybe the answer. That's the operational gearing. And it might be that we're just digesting that.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. David, give me the closing JSE prices today, please. Indices, that is.
And also the
trading volume, the volume traded, value traded, rather.
So the all share did nothing. We closed down 12 points, which is minus 0.2% at 65552. It's the second day in a row we've done very little. Resources was the main feature today. The resources up about 1.3%. Which is really at the top end of the market, the ones that we mentioned. It was also the diversifieds that did pretty well. Financials down a touch, the financial index down about quarter of a percent. Nothing happening on the industrials. They were pretty flat. On the consumer discretionary side, that's one index that was up, and I would imagine that would have to do with, I'm just looking at Richemont, and ABN, and British American Tobacco seem to be the ones that pushed it up. Process and Naspers down, Tencent was down, you know. So that's why consumer discretionary up, but industrials overall down, property also down. So not a great day. Volumes traded were about 20 billion. I'm going to give you 19, just over 20 billion. Naspers and Process once again making up 30% of that trade.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Okay, so just about 20 billion, which is enough for the JSE Limited to make money. Okay, and looking to the States, the Dow Jones up about 0.2%, S&P around about 0.4% higher. It's 42.30, the futures, and the high has been 42.58. So it's really just pushing those all-time record highs. And the NASDAQ is NASDAQ is up 0.4% as well, closing in on all-time records. Yeah. Now, David, tonight at 9 o'clock, Scotland play Croatia and England play the Czech Republic. There's a bit of COVID news from both camps. Scotland have lost their best player. And because their best player at the end of the England-Scotland game was seen shaking hands and hugging their two colleagues from the England team who they he plays with at Chelsea, England have lost two players as well, potentially. Yeah, but it's interesting. But England have already qualified because of the results last night, which is nice. So what do? They have a look and say, well, if we win the group, we play this team. If we come second in the group, we play that team and then play accordingly.
Do they know that outcome?
I think they've got a very good idea about who they might play if they come second or first. So they might be sneaky and say, well, maybe we'll draw the game or lose the game.
I don't think they want to throw a game.
No, I don't think so.
They'll be absolutely panned. Mm. They're already trying to defend the Scotland story. I mean, critics came in. I think they've got to pick up their game as well. And the problem is that they play badly. Who knows how they'll play in the next round?
Yeah.
So I think they've got to prove themselves as well, especially after that performance.
Exactly. As I say, winning is a habit.
We've got to see Harry Kane. I mean, yeah, haven't seen him kick a ball yet, but...
I think what's happening with Harry Kane, I mean, psychologically, is he's leaving Spurs and he doesn't know where to go. And he's a family man. He's got three kids and he thinks to himself, well, do I go to Milan? Do I go to Spain? Do I go to Manchester United? He doesn't know. So I think his head is somewhere else because he's looking useless at the moment. He's rubbish. Anyway, talking about rubbish, that was the 5 o'clock shadow with Nick Kunzer, who's left us from Sandon Private Wealth, and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, we'll see you on Thursday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.